Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
One last time in 2024, let's hear it for the boys here on our podcast. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about the season four finale of The Boys, season four, episode eight, Assassination Run, a series of words that doesn't trigger anybody in any way. If you haven't watched it on
Broadway, never heard it before, had to Google a lot of those words.
Oh, yeah. Particularly the second one, R-U-N. I don't know. I went to one of those pronunciation tools. And they said it out loud for me, so I knew.
Smart. You're so resourceful, Alex.
Thank you.
That's great. Yeah. You should be on The Boys. You're like our Frenchie.
Mon ami. How is that? Pretty good?
Awful.
Okay. Well, anyway, we are going to do a brief recap of this final episode here, and then we'll break everything down for you. So spoilers past this point. But in the final episode, it all goes down as Homelander is seemingly solo taking on Sage's plan to take over America, or more specifically, kill the president, President Bobby Singer, and install Victoria Newman, VP, in his place. Things go predictably awry in The Boys' fashion because of a shapeshifter who has taken the place of Annie, a.k.a. Starlight, in the previous episode. She proposes to Huey. Huey figures it out while they're in an underground bunker, and ultimately they knock out the shapeshifter. Victoria Newman, and I'm jamming through a bunch of stuff here, but Victoria Newman, I know, there's so much to talk about. I don't want to waste too much time on the recap. Victoria Newman ultimately decides she's had too much when Homelander threatens her daughter. She goes, talks to the boys, and that's when Butcher comes by, Venom's out, as Justin correctly predicts, tears her in half, leading us into the final season of the show. Obviously, again, there's a lot of other stuff that happens, particularly stuff with Ryan as Butcher battles for his soul here and maybe loses as Ryan seemingly kills Mallory by the end of the episode. Also, Frenchie and Kimiko kiss.
What?
Definitely going to talk about that, I'm sure. And it's revealed that this was Sage's plan the entire time. And then we get a post-credit stinger as well. We get a little end-credit scene there right at the end, teeing up maybe the next season, maybe Gen V season two. We'll certainly talk about that as well. So again, speeding through a lot of stuff here, faster than A-Train, who doesn't show up in this episode and has been marked safe
for
The Boys season finale. There you go.
Great recap.
Thank you so much. I think we could wrap up there. We've said everything we need to say about the season. Yep. I'm kidding. I want to start with Frenchie and Kimiko because that's always a positive thing to start with our friend Pete LePage, the rom-com expert here. After four seasons and a little bit of a side mission relationship here, we got Frenchie and Kimiko finally kiss in this episode. How are you feeling, Pete?
Well, here's the thing. Like, it's weird, you know, because it's The Boys, it's nothing. No, nothing's ever straightforward. And I've been pulling this for this relationship for seasons, wanting it to happen. And it finally happens. But it's conflicting because it's like, wait, I thought Frenchie, you know, I mean, you can do whatever you want. You know what I mean? But I was just kind of a little bit like, great, because I wanted this, but then it's complicated.
Are you talking about, not to put words in your mouth, but are you talking about the fact that he had a male-male relationship earlier in the season? So
yeah, and I thought like, oh, that's why they don't, because that's not who he's interested in. That's not, you know what I mean?
He's never stated out loud what he is, but I think the assumption is that he's bisexual or pansexual or something like that. He's been pretty open about being into men and women and back and forth throughout all of the seasons. But Justin, sorry.
Throughout all of time.
Yes. Dinosaurs were hella talking about that.
Yeah, exactly. He's a dinosexual. Just like me, I am that. What I think is, because
you go to that club and ask them to say not the Baba, right?
A dinosaurs on ABC sexual, which is much a sort of targeted version of that. I'm down with all dinos, my man. Any dinos I'm in there.
Yeah. I'm horny for Spideys, you always like to say.
Exactly. Give me that Ankylosaurus chunk. Yeah. Anyway, we can delete
Sorry,
that
while
part,
you're
right?
thinking about whatever you're saying, Pete, what dinosaur are you most horny for?
Yeah, I don't want to contribute to this at all.
Have you ever tried Ceratops?
Good. Build yourself some time to think of that, Alex, and shouts to you. What I was going to say is it wasn't surprising that that Frenchie sort of was into Kimiko. I think he's been that from the beginning. It's more, I thought we really settled into their relationship being just a, like, sort of soulmate friendship connection, and just they were the person for each other in a non-sexual way. So this was in an episode of shocking surprises across the board. This was the most surprising for me. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe they went this way, and it was really sweet. And it brings me to a sort of a larger idea that maybe we'll talk about later, sort of for what this season is. But that shot of the camera pulling away and them kissing, I thought was so rom-com. I was so surprised by it. But then that set up in the last moment when you've got in the montage of them all seemingly getting away, sort of Empire Strikes Back style. And then they all get horribly captured, basically, which I was like, very, very upsetting, especially what happens to Frenchie when we've seen, I forget her name,
Kate
from Gen V. We've seen how devastating her powers are to people. And you see her whisper to Frenchie and him walk off. I was like, I've never felt worse on this show than that moment. And then Kimiko finally speaks. Like, that was, it was surprising, but it was just a very well done progression, I thought.
I agree with you that I thought it was platonic, or at least it was this romance, but almost an asexual romance in a certain way.
Exactly.
So I also think, yes, it was surprising when they actually kissed, but I imagine it was to amp up that final moment of they're finally together. Here we go. And now they're torn apart again.
Yeah. And her screaming when he's pulled, it just heartbreaking, just absolutely heartbreaking.
I would say, I mean, this isn't true, but Karen Fukuhara is kind of like the stealth hero of the boys in a certain way, because she gets so much out of so little.
100%.
The scream, there's a shot towards the end that made me laugh so hard where when Victoria and Zoe come in and Zoe and Kimiko look at each other and just give each other the stink eye. So funny.
It was great. It was like two cats hissing at each other. It was so 100%. Funny.
Also, like a little moment that was amazing was Annie and Kimiko when she shows through text the fact that they like kissed. I just thought that was just
French
so adorable.
And French kiss.
And
did they French kiss?
I
guess that's all Frenchie knows how to do. French class. That's right.
Just because you're French doesn't mean you always French kiss. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a French fry? It's always the same. It's not. It's not like sometimes there's tongue and sometimes there isn't.
It's not always the same.
How else would you eat a French fry?
We find the hill Pete's going to die on. Not all French fries are the same.
That's right.
All right. So that's Frenchie and Kimiko. I'm sure we'll touch back on that again. I do want to go back to something we were discussing the last episode. Again, not to start or continue on something very grim, but we were talking a little bit about the treatment of Huey in the show, and specifically how a couple episodes back, arguably, he was sexually assaulted during the BDSM episode in Tech Knight's basement. Then we talked about how the previous episode, he was raped by a shapeshifter. We were hoping, fingers crossed, that they dealt with it in some way this episode. They did not. And in fact, they went the opposite way, where they kind of made it into a joke again and made it all about Annie's feelings about being cheated on, rather than anything that happened to Huey. I understand logically why they got there in the writer's room and that there wasn't maybe the time to be like, I was sexually assaulted and getting into that. But they've given so much care and thought over the four seasons up until and including this episode to Annie's sexual assault in the pilot of the series that it's a huge bummer that they're treating what happened to Huey as a joke, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. But it also, it speaks to sort of, I think, a general, a couple, like, there's an in-world thing here where in a superhero world like this, where there are shapeshifters, I think they're saying, like, it's not that exact thing, is what I think the show is saying. Like, oh, like the Eric Kripke quote that you read on the last episode, where it's like, oh, we didn't think of it that way. We sort of thought it was funny. And, like, that's here. Like, they're in this world so much that that's the way they think about it. But a larger idea that I was thinking about, especially in relation to Frenchie and Kimiko, is there's a line here, this isn't a Vought movie. Mm-hmm. And this series season finale felt like it actually was a Vought movie. And they've done so much of playing on the different Vought movies. And then this episode, especially the Frenchie Kimiko stuff, but also this Huey stuff, it feels like it is a Vought movie, where it's like violence is the language. Because mm-hmm. Huey's saying violence isn't brave. But then the show ends with Butcher coming in and ripping Victoria Newman. And that's sort of him. He's like, you should say you're welcome. And, like, that's such a turnaround, like, Vought movie tagline. So I think it's interesting that they maybe are almost calling out their own hypocrisy here. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm giving them too much, but they are sort of doing a Vought movie, commenting on the fact that this isn't a Vought movie, and maybe showing that the world has gotten darker, that they're introducing our world, that they're introducing this show into, and that means this show has to reflect that satirically.
Just to kind of jump in on the Vought movie kind of thing, and also how they make fun of, like, Marvel movies and stuff, the kind of Soldier Boy reveal, which is the actual end of the quote-unquote movie here, felt very much like Captain America, where it was, like, a similar shot, and, like, you know, so it did kind of feel...
Oh, it was, I mean, if we want to jump to that, it was the same shot, and they played a messed up version of the Captain America theme that just became atonal and weird, but it was 100% that.
In the from the moment of the beginning of that scene, it was using the Marvel textbook language. Like, it was the character, the quote-unquote main character, walking in, having a little joke with someone. I got this to you as soon as I could. Like, it was so that. I was also surprised by that, where they're simultaneously commenting so hard on the real world and the superhero genre, but also becoming it in a way that feels like they just are. It doesn't feel like a joke or a comment. Mm-hmm. It feels like they're like, no, we're doing this. This is a Vought movie. This is a Marvel movie.
To bounce off of what you're saying, I think this is the line the show has always walked, and it hasn't been an underdog. It's been a huge hit for seasons at this point, but it's very much been like, hey, look at this fucking Marvel stuff. Isn't that not dumb? But we're going to, like, take little bits and pieces. We're going to use superhero tropes. We're going to be skewering them. We're going to be satirizing them, but we're going to have our own drama going on underneath. That's sort of just the backdrop of the world. And what we've spent a lot of time talking about on this podcast that the show does well, so well, almost better than political satire, is the media satire, down to the ads, down to the fleshing out the world, etc. I would argue that it shifted a little bit too much in the wrong direction and became a little, like, I'm going to say 5-10% of what it's satirizing in this season. Mm. And I think part of that is it has gotten so big. It is huge. Marvel has shifted, and it's not necessarily the underdog either. It's still billions and billions of dollars and whatever, but certainly...
I don't think anyone would call Marvel the underdog.
But, like, at the same time, they actually, Kevin Feige did. I think he was like, I love being the underdog with Deadpool and Wolverine. are coming out. Like, but they've definitely, like, they've gotten some knocks, and so people, I think, are looking to the Boys in a certain way for, here's our superhero fix, that's why we love Homelander, etc. And that, plus the franchise extension of adding Gen V and going back and forth and weaving there, I'm not saying this in a dire way, but again, like, that needle has ticked a little too far in the direction of the Boys becoming the thing that it hated in previous seasons, you know?
Right. I mean, yes, I think that's a bit of that, but it feels intentional as well. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. It's hard to say, because this season ended in such a straight look at a, you know, middle franchise Marvel movie. Like, the heroes are down bad. They haven't been down this bad. Butcher is up big, but in the worst way possible.
Yep.
they are referencing Venom. They're referencing Captain America. They're touching on basically every superhero franchise. You could say that the darkness of this is very like Justice League-y as well. And so like, I don't know, it may be that they're sort of like, maybe the biggest sort of joke of all, because this is a comedy, I believe, technically, is that they're doing the, they're doing the thing, finally. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I think just to sort of wrap this up and then we can move on to some other plot points, but I think at the same time, actually, I lost my train of thought. The laundry started beeping next to me.
Well, I do think, you know, kind of speaking of the media, you know, kind of making fun of it here, you know, we start with the A-Train kind of right off and then go into like this PSA kind of all lives matter thing, you know, right at the start. And then we get into the kind of Huey and fake Starlight, which is, you know, this was hard to watch for a number of different reasons, but it's also like, yo, when is Huey going to wake the fuck up? Because it's this thing of we know Huey doesn't know yet, and he's slowly piecing it together. And it is rough to watch, especially the proposal and all that kind of stuff, because, you know, Huey wants this, but not with her, you know. So I mean, they really are playing with our emotions here.
I mean, it was a classic Huey storyline where he's wrong so much, and doesn't get it until like literally the last moment, but figures out, you're like, oh, he did it. Great. And then he and Mother's Milk blow it like so hard in that moment, which I thought was very funny.
Oh, but then my God. He still gets his speech. Look straight ahead moment was hysterical. Mom Smoke's like, what are you talking about? And he's just like, no, look straight ahead. Be cool. It's Annie. Who's Annie? What do you? Oh, man.
Yeah. That was some great comedy. Do you buy Huey's speech to Annie at the end? Like, I do think it's true in the context of the show, but where he's talking about, I've been piecing it together all along. I didn't buy that because I don't think that's why the way any of those scenes were played. Like, I got no sense of hesitation from him before that moment where she was like, it feels like a furnace in here.
No way, dude. When she looked for the keys and got them right away and he was
exactly. Okay.
A moment there. He's looking at her and he's like, that's weird. That's the one where you first see him turn.
Yeah. Okay.
The other stuff he said, it seems like he was sort of making it up. But the keys for sure.
I do want to give a shout out to Aaron Moriarty here, who I think did an awesome job of playing these double roles. Some of the little looks that she does in the background, her face just sort of shutting down. Dude,
when Huey proposes and the music starts and then Huey leaves and the music just cuts out and her face drops and then the music slowly starts up again when he comes back. That was just brilliant. Not only acting wise, but like the post editing on that was unbelievable. But yeah, that was really hilarious.
Yeah.
And I do think that the season for Annie, despite the fact that we talked about how she was sort of like spinning her wheels a bit with her storyline for the first few episodes, I thought I was satisfied with this ending. I liked that she literally had to face herself in the most like violent, aggressive way possible, where literally the shapeshifter knew her secrets and was spitting them at her. Mm-hmm. And then she sort of reckoned with them in the way. And, you know, it coming down to her powers coming back at this horrible moment perfect where she was getting away was a nice sort of build up and sets her up as sort of the action hero, perhaps going into next season.
Yeah, totally agree with all of that. I thought that was great and smartly done. Didn't exactly see it coming, but I think they did a nice job of tying up that arc.
The Huey kind of just like him being like, you know, because he's like, I blew it with her. And then him going like, yes, Huey. When she's that like, you're getting funny. A ton of tests. And he's like, yeah, whatever.
And I will say, I did really like his speech because I think it underlined the overarching theme of the season that we've talked about here on the podcast. The violence isn't brave, forgiveness, let it go, a little mercy, that's brave. If we're ever going to win against monsters, I think we need to start acting human. That's what everybody's storyline was about this season. So despite some misgivings overall about the directions they're heading in, I do think they were very strong and very clear about that. And everything that Huey went through and learned over the course of the season led to that really good speech, particularly as, not to jump too far ahead into speculation, I think it's going to be the team versus Butcher and his philosophy of kill all soups in the final season. So,
yeah. It seems like, just on that, it feels like the next season's the redemption of Butcher.
Really?
And going from, don't you think it's going to be the dark, you think they're going to fight him and kill him?
Yeah, Butcher's going to die horribly.
Can we jump ahead to slight spoilers for the comics, even though they clearly, down to this very episode, have never directly adapted the comics? That's where things end up. After they kill Homelander in the comics, Butcher kills the rest of the boys except for Huey, and then it's up to Huey to kill Butcher. Yeah. So that's where we kind of end. And then there's a little coda, the Dear Becky series that they released that was all about Huey getting the nerve up to actually marry Annie. So we'll see how far they go, but I really think we're going to get that very, very loose arc there of Butcher needing Huey probably to kill him. Like, Joe Kessler has taken over. He is, I think, metaphorically and literally in the back seat, right, at this point.
Yeah, Negan.
And that's going to continue. And whatever Butcher is pushed to by letting Joe essentially take over, he's going to need his friends to take him down.
Well, and just to talk about that and the Ryan of it all, too, like the way we get there is Butcher knows he's dying. And he really, I think, is like, I am actually dying. He calls Huey, gives that steakhouse speech, go do that. Yeah. And he knows he's just...
By the way, have you ever been there in Nevada?
No, it sounds
where the women get their kit out. Is that what he says?
Yeah. I was like, huh? I had to play that back because I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, dude. And they means a crafting kit for a crafter noon.
Absolutely.
At the casino.
Yeah. There's nothing better than a crafter noon, man.
At a steakhouse? Come on. Steak and
then
crafting?
You're eating good and you're crafting good. The two great activities.
Nothing wrong with squeezing a little glue right next to some steaks.
Yeah.
Nothing could go wrong.
Yeah, decoupage. It's like Entourage meets decoupage is what I always...
My only problem with that steak place, honestly, is they have a sign on the wall that says no dinosaur models. And I'm like, I know why, but like, come on, guys.
Yeah, but come on, guys. Let's be who we want to be.
It's Vegas, baby.
But it's Vegas, baby. But what I was saying is I feel like he's like, okay, and I'll talk to Ryan. I'll set him up in a place to be the hero that everyone needs. And that goes horribly wrong because Grace panics, mismanages Ryan. Ryan accidentally kills her. And that's when he's like, it's over for Ryan. The only thing I have left is whatever darkness is inside me here.
That's a scary shift for Butcher. But what's tough is, the Ryan of all was great. I really liked how they were handling it. And you're right. It did. It was going well. And then Grace was like, I can't keep all these secrets, and just kind of blurts them all out. Like, Homelander is bad for this, 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 and this, which as a truth, I'm glad Ryan now knows all that about him, you know, because, you know, this goose stepping around Homelander and him like seeing his dad in a way that, you know, is not knowing all the truths, I think is great. But yeah, just kind of rushed it at the end there. It could have gone so much better. And just horrible to see Butcher take this turn like this, you know?
Well, but that's why I feel like, I don't know if the show can end in such a dark place like you're predicting, Alex.
You mean like at the end of this season?
No, at the end of next season. I think this season was dark, but I think what Alex is saying about Butcher, the whole season about killing Butcher, like, I think this Butcher's different than the comics, and it's much more about Ryan, Becca. Like, we've set up a different sort of array for this character. That's why I feel like it's going to be more of a Darth Vader thing, where it will be about redeeming him and Huey being that sort of light as to Butcher's darkness and bringing him back, so that he can finally kill Homelander and end this Ryan Becca arc, which feels like the central story that we've, as opposed to the comic.
I mean, I could see that happening. This is obviously wild speculation, but I could see that happening, particularly with, like, if they do end the Homelander soups messed up thing that is this whole show, and move it forward in some way where Ryan, as he has asked to be several times, is a real superhero, actually doing real things, even if he's the only one. But he's like, I'm going to find a couple of like-minded people. We're going to try to be real heroes instead of whatever this celebrity thing is. That's a really positive, hopeful way to end the show that also potentially leaves it open for further extensions of the franchise, which obviously Prime Video and Amazon want to do, and it seems like even Eric Kripke wants to do. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Homelander Ryan of it all. I mean, you know, we find Homelander finds the picture of Ryan with, you know, Butcher and his mom. And he freaks out, you know what I mean? And this is the kind of scary Homelander that Ryan saw, but then kind of ran away from. So I was surprised when Ryan was like, hey, there are times where I like it with my dad. Like, that's sweet. But also I'm like, dude, have you not been paying attention at all? Because your dad is fucking crazy scary, bro.
I know, but your dad is your dad, right? Like, if it's the most messed up personality and circumstances possible, he has connected with him. And he does want this father figure because he was raised solo by Becca the entire time. And that's what Homelander provides. So I understand there being emotion there, even though we, the audience, know Homelander is the worst person possible.
And also, like, what, and this is Grace's mistake, Ryan's a kid. He doesn't have the facilities to deal with all this stuff, the faculties to deal with all this stuff. And it's the same, like, he's like, Grace over explains stuff. He's like, I like some of the stuff in my life. I like candy. But Grace is like, you know what, where candy comes from? And it's like, hey, cool it. Okay.
Horses, hooves. But yeah, I did like Ryan pointing out, like, yo, you're doing exactly what you did to my father. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, like, I really love that. At least he has the facilities. He's kind of aware in that way. You know what I mean? Yeah, I might be blinded by the whole dad of it all a little bit, but I'm glad at least he was kind of like, you know, it sucked when he killed Grace. I was like, oh, God, I don't know if there's coming back from that, you know?
Ryan's in this place that I think a lot of people struggle with their dad specifically, the man specifically, where it's like you want to become your dad in some ways, but then you want to reject your dad in other ways. And he's literally like, you're going to make me like my dad, my greatest fear, but also sort of dream. Mm-hmm. And it's just they put him in that and have it go as poorly as possible.
One last thing that I want to say about this, and this is just a real world thing based on the fact that we're talking about Ryan as a kid. By the time they get around to filming season 5, I don't know if you've seen any stuff of Cameron Crivetti. He's been very active on TikTok and posting things about the show. He's like full on way taller teen at this point, which they filmed this back in 2023. So it's going to be like 2 solid years. So it'll be interesting to see. They can't have him be like, I'm the kid with the voice who's breaking because of puberty anymore, because he's going to be a full 2 years older.
Well, I know we're peppering predictions in here a lot. I think we're going to get a bit of a time dash. We got a little, that montage had some time extension to it. And I think we're going to get more of that, because for as much as the way this Marvel movie style ending to the season went, I think we're ramping to like fucked up Avengers. The boys become fucked up Avengers. Mm-hmm. We've got Butcher. Like, he's a little bit out of that, but he's like the Venom sort of gather. He maybe end up gathering everyone like Samuel Jackson, Nick Fury. I think we've got Ryan, who is going to maybe be like a messed up Thor. We've got Ashley as a Hulk, fucked up a Hulk coming. Like, I think we have elements here.
Yeah, I would, again, speculation, but like what was happening to Ashley's
head. I'm scared to see what Ashley's going to turn into.
I feel like she's still going to wear a wig, probably, but I feel like that we were getting a little bit of the leader thing with the big brain coming out and everything. So I don't know. I don't know what it is, but like whatever she needs, which is some sort of control, maybe she can control people with her mind now or something like that. We'll see.
I hope they just make her a Hulk. I want her to wreck shit. Like, it makes sense. If she's been repressing everything, she's all the Hulk elements from a modern media perspective.
Yeah. Also, rip other Ashley. Really sad to see her go.
Oh, man. That Ashley jokes between the deep and noir was fun.
That was a fucked up end for that. That was like just a fun joke. And to see like younger Ashley just like gets stabbed in a very weird outfit, I thought was super sad.
That was sad. Particularly as it led to Black Noir 2's murder boner paying off on that one scene we talked about from like two episodes back.
Yeah, how about the deep punching through somebody's face? I mean, punches someone.
Co-writer guy, right?
In the face is one thing, but then through the face, I mean, Jesus.
Yeah.
Just to talk about the deep a little bit, because this is something, another like very dark, but really interesting plot line. He's been a punchline for this show forever. And I think maybe the point of his arc this season is like, all these like dumb people who get caught up and believe in this philosophy, they're funny, like dumb fascists, but they're still fascists. Like, he's still killing people without remorse because someone just handed him a list and he added Ashley's name to it. Like, and he does it in a dumb,
way. Shouldn't Ashley be on the list? It was like, oh, fuck. And that was great cut to Ashley just sprinting down the halls, running for her life.
Yeah. In the middle of those terrifying scenes, too, some very funny jokes, like Ashley just making it through the closing door. Very funny. Also, the deep spelling her name wrong and then asking, does anybody know her last name?
Great. Funny. Very funny.
All good stuff. Also, the
deep, dark. And I think commenting on our real world, how people fall into this who are just, you know, the butt of a lot of other people's jokes.
Yeah. Now, to that point, we should probably talk about another thing we discussed here on the podcast, Sage's plan. It's revealed at the end here when Homelander has wrecked everything and is sitting despondent in his apartment. Sage comes in with a balloon for Ryan and is like, yep, this was all part of the plan the entire time. Do you buy that? Just not in a in-world thing, because I think, yes, she's telling us that that's true, but do you buy that she planned this whole thing?
I mean, I buy that she had a plan, and then, like she said, she made adjustments kind of as things went along. But what I don't buy is her, like, being nice to Homelander, like, oh, yeah, you tossed me aside, like he says, like a piece of garbage. And he's completely shocked, which I thought was a great kind of a thing for Homelander, just dumbfounded by the fact that she returned. I just it's scary because then she just kind of walks away. And I was like, I don't understand, like, how she can just kind of come in and out and not have to kind of like be there. You know what I mean? How Homelander's just kind of let her be this wild card.
Yeah, buckle up for phase two.
Yeah, right.
The thing that it's hard to say to your question, Alex, but I think what she is she's like the Sevens version of the boys. Like, she just operates the way they do, where she like bugs people, like gets the footage, knows they're going to fuck up and is there to record it, and then takes advantage of it. Like, she's using their tactics against them and it works in this case. So whether or not it was her plan from the jump, she is like the boys, figuring out as she goes along, and I think will be a bit of a villain next season. I still think that by the end of the series, she will just be like, I'm trying to destroy everything.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what she kind of did here. That's what her plan is to burn everything to the ground. That's why she thanks Homelander, is she's like, this is great. What a great thought experiment. I was able to get the president of the United States arrested, kill the vice president, knock you down a peg, have everything wrecked and the boys on the run and ultimately captured. Awesome. Isn't that cool? I could do all of these things. And for the first time, tying back to the speech she gave Victoria Newman a couple of episodes ago, I do think that thing she told Victoria Newman about her grandmother and coming up with a cancer cure and getting rejected, so decided to burn everything down, I think that's 100% true. Like, that's what she wants to do. But at the same time, I think the thing that she was doing with Victoria Newman was clearly pushing her in a place where she was most vulnerable, because, like she says, Newman isn't a good patsy. The thing that I don't necessarily buy is her getting Newman out of the way via Butcher venoming out, because she hasn't interacted there at all. I think maybe the retroactive explanation is that's why she was like, don't kill Butcher, because I need him to go tumor wild and kill Victoria Newman.
I don't know, but she could have never. How is she going to know that? I think she could say she could always have known that Victoria was going to bail.
Yeah.
And that would get herself killed. But I don't know. That's why, like, it's hard to believe that this was her plan. I want to see that notebook. I want to see Butcher Venom, question mark, kill.
Well, Pete, you've seen the notebook a bunch of times. Does that lay out the plan the way that it played out in the season?
Yeah, this is an exact replica of the notebook. No, no, there's nothing like it at all. But if you're a bird, I'm a bird.
Oh, nice. Sweet.
So smooth.
So Silky I guess we'll see. I would love it's I say this as not the smartest person in the world. It is incredibly difficult, I think, to write a character who is the smartest person in the world because you gotta lay all that shit out. You cannot have them winging it. And I do hope as they're working on season 5, and clearly Sage is going to be part of it, plan that out. Like, figure out what is her plan, how does it play into the season, probably how does it go wrong by the end of the season, because I don't think ultimately she's going to be like cackling while the world burns, that's how we end the show or anything like that. But it does feel like there was a lot of improvisation going on here, and that doesn't lead into what her character is supposed to be.
What I do like about her is that she is the smartest person in the world, but also has to live life as the dumbest person. Like the fact that she sodomizes herself and is like incredibly
lobotomizes.
Well, sorry. Thank you.
She
sort of does both in a way.
I just think it's one after the other. It's a nice thing that, you know, someone who's incredibly smart also has to live life, you know, just to kind of balance it out, I think is an interesting character trait.
She's great. Yeah. She is a great addition to the show. I have no problem with her being on the show. I'm very excited to see her in the next season. I just have a problem with, like, she seems regular smart, not crazy smart at this point, and I want to see, like, oh, man, that was a crazy plan. How'd you pull that off? Rather than, I might be able to do that, you know?
Yeah. Well, also, like, we don't know when... When's she coming up with these plans? When her brain is high functioning, or when she's jabbed up with after Pete's done sodomizing it, or whatever word you said.
I mean, part of the plan being that everybody got Crunchwrap Supremes feels like maybe it was after the itemizing, whatever version it is. But we'll see.
Itemizing,
yes. What else should we talk about? Clearly, there's a lot of other characters. We do get some good MM moments, but not a lot of emotional closure with him, though I do think it was funny to have Love Sausage show up again and be the one that takes him down.
Yeah.
That was
enjoyable.
Very funny. He stepped up as a leader. I thought that was good in the end. So that
I liked the way he was running stuff for sure. And yeah, I mean, that's... You know, you're so close to your happy ending, and then you get cock slapped in the public bathroom. I mean, that's got to be rough, man.
Classic.
Yeah, classic fall. Tragic fall.
And then we didn't talk about Firecracker at all. She doesn't have a lot to do in this episode, surprisingly.
Yeah, her and Homelander, like, you know, you think she's okay, but then, like, when she starts, coughing and seizing because of the medication she's on for Homelander, and the fact that he's like scooched down, it's just fucking heartbreaking. You know what I mean?
I mean, I was like, is this a virus thing? They really emphasized her being sick. So
metoclopramide. I'm definitely pronouncing that incorrectly, which is the drug taking. It does exactly what they said in the show. It's actually a cancer drug. As a weird side effect, they discovered that it can increase lactation, maybe, though no tests have actually conclusively proven that, which is why nobody recommends it doctor-wise as a drug. It's gotten out there anyway, so people are like, yeah, give me that so I can get increased lactation for my baby. But it has a lot of potential bad side effects, including exactly what she talks about, heart palpitations, seizures, flu-like symptoms, etc. So... yeah, it's a weird coincidence when they're talking about this virus all the time for her to be getting sick at the same time, but that's because of the lactation drug she's taking.
But it was well played if it was a red herring or just like a little thing. Let's talk about Homelander, though, real quick. We start with him just reckoning with his pubes, as we all do.
Mm-hmm. I wrote somewhere, Homelander lets his pubes fall like so much snow.
That's true. Beautiful. I mean, the
you know, each jar of pube pubes is different, like a snowflake, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I believe Walt Whitman pubes wrote that.
Well, women had originally said that. The jar of pubes is his rosebud, and we get that moment.
Oh, man. Wow.
Pubes.
What's he referring to?
What does he mean?
Let's spend an entire movie investigating that.
But I do like that he feels like he's off, you know, gone nuts when he exposes Newman. But then he has this great speech with her, like, get on the train, gorgeous, all these, like, again, like, action movie lines. And then he's immediately exposed as having blown it, how they're going to have to kill everybody at Vaughn. And you see him fall apart again. And then we see him sort of Ozymandias style right before Sage walks in. So just another great performance and arc for Homelander.
It'll be interesting to see how they deal with him in the upcoming season too, because like we talked about, he was really up at the beginning, at the end of season three, but going into season four, it's all about showing how incompetent he is when it deals with logistics and dealing with people. And that just needles him in a way that we haven't seen before. Now we're ending the season with Speaker Calhoun, now President Calhoun, 100% being a patsy. He's got no power. Homelander is in charge. The entire country is taken over by law enforcement soups. So Homelander is in charge of that. My guess here is that very similarly, he's up at the end of the season. But going into next season, Sage is still running shit. Homelander, having to run an entire country of law enforcement soups, he can't do that. He doesn't have the skills there. That's going to drive him insane.
Yeah.
So excited to see
that. Being a bureaucrat, being a figurehead bureaucrat is not something he's going to enjoy. While still reckoning with getting older and his legacy and Ryan being that, but not, like, we got to see where that lands. That's
maybe the season finale, a series finale of The Boys, he'll die of old age.
That would, I thought you were going to say pubes.
He'll die of pubes.
Yeah, we all will in some fashion, I guess, eventually. A couple of things just as I'm reading through my notes here. Loved the rapid-fire jokes at the beginning. The tweet from Bork, thanks to all the fans, rest assured I am doing everything in my power to convince Vought Studios to hashtag release the Bork cut again. They're clocking the trailer view, so keep watching. And then Ashley's line, we just realized we'd make more from the write-off. Great dig.
Oh, so sad, so real. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was rough.
I love the lead lad diet lunches the shifter was feeding to Addie. The cover of it had a picture of a cartoony black noir, said only 100 calories, and it's a excellent source of fun, which I thought was very funny, just as a throwaway joke.
Just in general, I liked that they gave a lot of, they put a lot of time into sort of the shapeshifter character, how she's a, Annie calls her a psychopath. She says sociopath.
Sociopath. Oh my God. Her face when she said sociopath, the rage, like, oh my God, that was really impressive.
That was cool. And the whole, like, you all think you're the heroes of your own story. Like, I like that they backed her up into her own character and philosophy and, like, tragic life, and then let that run right into all of Annie's problems she's been dealing with. I thought that was a really smart way of smashing them into each other.
What did you think about the move that the shifter's go-to move was biting people? She bit a lot of people. Throughout a lot of people.
It didn't make a lot of sense, but I guess. I mean,
if you feed off of other people's skin, you would think biting would be maybe a thing, you know?
Well, yes, but she just needs to touch them to take their...
She doesn't need to touch them with her mouth, necessarily.
But I guess that's her only real attack weapon is teeth, besides punching.
Yeah. I loved the moment with Newman on Firecracker's talk show when Homelander just is fed up and shoots her with a heat blast in the head. That was great. Yeah. That was so tense, so upsetting. And shouts out to Claudia Dumet, torn apart at the end of the episode. She did such good work over the course of the series. Particularly this episode, like we talked about, I think it was last episode or conversation with Huey, where also she does so much with so little, where it's all just in her eyes and holding back.
Yeah.
The moment there where she gets shot and just the shock and horror from her of having her secret revealed on national television and then ultimately just falling apart in her apartment. All that stuff is great. Really good.
Yeah, that phone call with Huey was nice.
Yeah.
Really good.
Co-writer dying and the deep... offering a buddy in the deep saying, you're a writer, you don't get paid shit. Justin, did you feel seen in that moment?
Hurt. hurt by that. Real.
Justin, was it like you were being punched through the face there?
Well, again, I was like, oh, yeah, you are the smartest, the deep. Please. And then I felt that punch right through my face and into my wallet.
Oh.
Any other moments from the episode to talk about?
Annie's line, I don't know who I am, but I know I'm the bitch beating your ass.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I wrote that down, too. That was really unbelievable.
You wrote that down on your body in permanent tattoo ink, you meant, right?
Yep.
The other thing I liked was that when Ashley's running after she's like, knows she's going to be killed, she runs past the statue of A-Train, which I thought was like such a nice little smart way, just a shot to capture, like, remember, she fucked this up without saying any words. It was very cool.
Also, you know, because she's running for her life and, you know, A-Train's.
Running. That's A-Train's thing. Yeah. I can't believe we didn't see A-Train this episode. Shocked.
He'll come back. Saw a statue.
Yeah, he'll definitely come back. We're going to have him in the final season.
I know, but it's just I really thought this season was about him a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot, but I thought we were going to get a final bit.
Yeah, it is surprising structurally that they wrapped up everybody this episode except A-Train, who they wrapped up the last episode. But I think they wanted to give him his hero moment, wrap up that arc, have him go in the opposite direction of Ashley and MM, and then kind of move on from there and get into the big
assassination. I would think put him in the montage. He's watching all this from afar on the news.
Something.
Feeling that superhero.
Maybe they haven't decided where he is yet. It might be as simple as that.
True.
Yeah. Anything else before we start to wrap up this season of television? All right. Why don't we talk about... first of all, who was best boy, Pete? Who was best boy in this episode and also in the season for you?
Well, I would say Annie this episode. She really had amazing stuff from start to finish. And, I was just super impressed with all the great stuff. Not only the whole season, but definitely this episode. Man, the whole season... That's hard to say. I would either go with Huey or Mother's Milk here. So,
What about you, Justin?
I mean, I've been backing Homelander all season from a storytelling perspective, not his philosophies or point of view.
Come on, man.
But I just think, Anthony Starr is just so good in this role and really like is able to bring like all these flaws, all this like horrible, like fascistic behavior and, still, we ride with him just enough and feel his pain, and that's such a hard to make a monster like him come to life.
Homelander, right?
Homelander, yes, is so hard, and he does it. For this episode, I sort of want to shout out the shapeshifter. I really liked that her as a great villain here, and was terrifying and scary while still being having a real backstory.
Totally agree with you guys. I don't have a better answer than Erin Moriarty on both sides of the coin here. She finally got her the one moment where she got to fight herself. Eventually, all action stars get to fight themselves in a movie at some point. So that was really, really well done. And over the course of the season, I agree with what you guys said. Just to say a different one, I think Carl Urban did a really good job as Butcher this season. It, like I think you were talking about, Justin, as he's gotten harder and Joe pushed him into these horrible directions, Carl Urban has softened the character in a in a very holistic way that makes sense. Like, particularly in this episode, just the way that he's talking to Ryan, his disappointment in Mallory, it's upsetting, it's sad, but there's been a real character evolution and fight against that character evolution from the character that I think is really interesting and fascinating to watch.
I don't know. I just think it's one of those things where it's like Butcher was bad, and then he was kind of good. And then this whole like devil angel on the shoulder thing is, I agree with what you're saying, Alex, but I just think there's also a frustration where it's just like, pick a side, man. Are you a fucking good guy or are you a fucking bad guy? And I was a little bit kind of, it was driving me nuts a little bit with the back and forth.
Well,
and sometimes
one thing the show does laudably as its best is it represents real people, and real people are neither all good nor all bad. that's kind of what they're saying. Like we talked about with the Seven, sure. These are real people who are assholes most of the time. And the boys are often assholes as well, but they could be real people and they care about each other. So all of those things can be true simultaneously.
Agreed. And one thing I want to kind of jump on that Justin said, yeah, the guy who plays Homelander, I, you know, saw him on a talk show and I was like, holy shit. Like, who he is and what he's doing as Homelander is really fucking impressive, man. I was just kind of like, wow. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you see somebody and they sound similar and they kind of, you know what I mean? And you're like, oh, they did a good job of casting where they just kind of brought that over here and turned this up and down a little bit. But holy shit, it's really impressive what he's doing as Homelander.
Before we wrap up here, we've already talked about a lot of predictions, but Gen V season 2 ostensibly is coming somewhere in the middle. Then we're going to get the final season of The Boys if everything all pans out. We were way off in our predictions for season 4, but let's do it again anyway. What do you think is going to happen? What's your big prediction for the final season of The Boys? Justin? Well, Pete, you want to go first?
Well, I just wanted to first kind of say how I felt about this season as a whole. I was pretty disappointed with this last episode being so bleak and ending in a way that, you know, like we almost got a happy ending and then it was kind of ripped away from us. It was pretty brutal. I mean, especially for the boys, but it was brutal on a lot of levels. One, we kind of, Gen V was great to kind of see these characters, but then we see them here not acting like the characters we know from the show. You know what I mean? Like they've gone completely bad, you know? So that was.
Well, we haven't seen the heroes yet. We've just seen the villains.
Yeah. And that's the thing though, but they weren't that bad in the show, the way that they're acting here. So it was really hard to see them on Homelander's side doing horrible things and using their powers for horrible reasons. So it was kind of like this sad ending where the bad guys win on top of the players from this other show that we liked and had a lot of depth to them being the bad guys as well. So they kind of really doubled down on that in the way that was a brutal ending. I mean, luckily, you know, you have another season, because if that's the last time we see these guys, that's a really rough way to end an amazing show. So I'm nervously excited about the hopes for the season. But as far as predictions for next season, what I would love to see is, you know, somehow we get together. And I don't know if it's, you know, our whoever's left kind of forming to go up and take down the Seven or what. But I'll be interested to see who joins what side and how it all comes together. But yeah, it's got to be Homelander's got to die, you know. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Justin?
I mean, I said it earlier. I think we're going to get a full like Avengers Endgame style clash at the end. Like, we're going to get the fucked up version of the shot in the first Avengers movie of the spin around camera of all of them there. And it's going to be just like a fucked up thing. That's what I think. I think that Gen V is going to play into that as well. I feel like that's part of the extended universe that they'll bring together.
Yeah, you have to. It's been such a key. They showed them so many times. You kind of have to do that.
Yeah, and the heroes will actually be there fighting the good fight. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of funny, horrible things we'll see on the way to that, but is what I think.
My big prediction is what I said earlier, that I think we are going to get some sort of riff on the comic where, like Pete said, Homelander is going to die. Butcher is going to be the ultimate villain of the piece. I don't think he'll actually kill everybody because that is way too dark, but I do think he will need Huey, this character he has had such a connection to over the course of the show, to be the one to ultimately take him down. And I think it's something that Butcher will want. So
Ryan,
I think we'll get
down
a mixed happy ending for the series is my guess. I am very curious about Gen V season 2 because they've said that the final episode will hand it off, obviously because of the sad untimely passing of Chance Pertomo. They've had to change a lot, but I do wonder what that means in terms of Sam and Kate, because we saw them. Is it just their status quo, or similar to how the end credit scene of Gen V season 1 tied directly into The Boys season 4, will Soldier Boy in some way play into Gen V season 2? I don't know, but we'll have to
gotta think
and see.
Gotta think something, because it does feel weird for the boys to go back in on Soldier Boy, because we've done that.
Yeah.
So
I will say, on the other hand, they've talked to Jared Padalecki, who was Jensen Ackles' co-star on Supernatural, about doing something in the final season. And I think it's just going to be too hard for them to resist to somehow get the two of them in a scene together in the final season, potentially with Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who was also on there, and Jim Beaver, who plays Bobby Singer, was also a mainstay on the show. So
The Beavs? They're definitely going to do something.
They're going to do something on that. We'll see. And we'll be right there for it on the podcast. In the meantime, if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about The Boys. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. Until next time, whenever that may be, bye, boys. We hear you.
We hear you. In the meantime, I'm going to go get lobotomized by a dinosaur or whatever Pete said.
Hey, thanks for listening.